Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read. As I read it, there's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed. And today is a different kind of episode. Instead of just reviewing one book, I'm going to be kind of reviewing three books. It's a series of books called the First Law series by Joe Abercrombie. It's a fantasy novel trilogy, and I first read the first book ages and ages and ages ago, I reviewed it back on episode number 120, and I often just read the first book in a series and then see if it works out and if I like it, and then I'll continue. And a few months ago I downloaded the second book in the series. The first one is The Blade Itself. The second is called Before They Are Hanged, and I enjoyed that book quite a bit better, mainly because of maybe lowered expectations or different expectations or just knowing what to expect. I kind of enjoyed it a lot more. And lots of people said, hey, even if you don't like the first one or the second one, even if you think they're a bit long and meandering, you're not quite sure where the story goes, stick with it, stick around until the end of book three and you'll really enjoy it. So I thought, well, I'll just grasp it. By the whatever metaphor you want to use, and just go for it and read and review this final book in the series. Of course, I downloaded it, listened to it as an audiobook from audible.com, and just got through it pretty quickly. I took a pause from listening to too many podcasts, and the other books that I was reading were ebooks as well, so I got through it pretty quickly. And so this episode, I'm just going to talk about the final book in the series, but obviously it's going to be in a lot of context from the first two books. I'm going to be reviewing the full three-book series. So this episode is, of course, for the final book in the series, which is called The Last Argument of Kings, but it's actually for the entirety of the First Law series. So it's probably going to be called something like The First Law Series by Joe Abercrombie, and hopefully... people, if you're interested in what I thought of the first two books, I will cover that here. Otherwise, go away and listen to my other podcasts where I discuss these other books in a bit more depth, and you can follow along with me with the frustrations of reading such a series. Now, let me open my notes here. Let me go across to the Goodreads.com page about this. This Last Argument of Kings was published in 2008. 536 pages long, or if I look at the Audible length, 27 hours. Now, the other books were about 20 hours each, so he obviously realized that he came to the end of this series and went, oh, okay, there's a lot more book here than I thought. This was going to be a trilogy, but there's a lot more that I want to say, a lot more that I've got to fit in to this last book. So, it is a bit more chunky than the previous ones. Anyway, across to my... to my notes here. So the first book, what I enjoyed about the first book was like all the characters and the writing, and it was very well, you know, the voice acting was really good. But most of my main criticism came down to that the fact that there was not really a lot happened, but there was a lot happening. There was lots of important stuff happening, but I wasn't quite sure why it was happening, or even if it was happening, or what was going on at all. Like that was my main criticism. It was all like plotting and story based. The second book, I read it through, and there was one or two events which seemed to have any impact at all, but most of the main characters, you know, they didn't have anything to do with the wider story. You know, there's like all these characters doing stuff, and you think, well, this person's over down here in the south, and these people are in the north, and these people back in the city in the middle, and these people across here in the west, and they're all going in different directions. And I think, well, like, what is this character doing? What is that character doing? For example, there's a character, Luther, Giselle Dunn Luther, and he doesn't do anything for the entirety of this second book in this series. And then near the end of it, it goes something, 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 new candidate for a king, or a candidate for a new king. And I was thinking, well, blah, 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 something, something, that's Luther, that's going to be him. So I was thinking, well, okay, book three is going to be about Luther coming back and becoming the king, and he's going to come back at the very end of it and stuff like that. Anyway, there was a few other minor points which seemed to progress some kind of story, but for massive amounts of the book, we're spending time with all these people going, you know, miles and miles in this direction, other people going miles and miles in this direction, other people wasting months and months up in that direction, and nothing really ever seemed to tie together or progress anywhere. And the big quest that they go on, they get there, and what they're looking for isn't there, and they're just like, well, that was a waste of time, wasn't it? And I'm just like, I've just listened to 20 hours of audiobook, and you told me this is a really big waste of time. So, book three begins, this Last Argument of Kings is book three, and my first Goodreads Goodreads.com update, which I, you know, put when I was like, you know, 2% of the way through or 5% of the way through, I put. So, wow. So nothing happened in the entire 3 months, in the entire 3 months it took to get home. Nothing worth mentioning at all, question mark. And the reason is because it took them, took these characters, an entire book to go on their quest all the way across this massive continent. You know, there's loads of danger all the way along, and they're all learning stuff, and all the character interactions are really interesting. The characters are doing this, and they're doing that, and these characters are kind of getting together, and these ones started off as enemies, and they're becoming friends, and these persons started off, and they didn't respect anyone, and they're learning respect, and they're, you know, this guy was all pampered, and now he's having to learn how to live life on the road, and all this interesting stuff was happening along there. And I was thinking, well, book three would be, you know, a big part of it would be them getting home. And on the way home, they learn more stuff. And when they get home, you get home just in time for, you know, Luthar to become the king and these other people to turn up and save the day at the last moment or something like that. But actually what happens right at the very beginning, they just turn up home and they're like, oh, yeah, we just caught the bus. We just caught the boat home. Just came down this river on the boat and now we're here. And I'm just thinking, nothing happened. Like, oh, we spent a whole book with them going through there. And then the book itself starts saying, it starts reviewing the second book. It goes like, Luthar is like, oh, why did I even go there? It was a waste of time. It was just a painful, uncomfortable, disfiguring waste of time, because he got a cut on his face and now he's always, you know, broken face and he's disfigured. He's like, it's just a disfiguring waste of time. And I'm like, yes, that's what it feels like when people go on this long quest over this direction. You know, I can understand that Joe Abercrombie is playing with these fantasy tropes, you know, like, oh, we're going to go on a quest, we're going to go here, and it's going to be interesting, we're going to go there, and this is going to happen, and you just think, oh, and they get there, oh, and it wasn't there. They went all the way to Mount Doom, and the volcano had dried up, and they're like, oh, damn it, we're going to have to find another way to get rid of this ring. You know, I'm talking in, you know, other metaphors here. Anyway, so And then there's people in the north, like, they're still just hanging out in the north and fighting and doing this stuff. And then this character turns up and they're just like, yeah, we're just still hanging around up here and still fighting the same people with the same people. Nothing has changed. Nothing's changed. We're just hanging out up here. It's still cold. We're still wet. Nothing's changed. And I'm like, yeah, no kidding me. I mean, some stuff has changed in the north, but generally the tone is just like, yep, just hanging out here in the north. And then when there's this another character who is reading a book, she is reading this book in the book, and the book is called The Fall of the Master Maker. And she's saying, I've been trying to get through this damn book again, but there's just too many wizards and too many battles and endless journeys. And I'm like, yes, that was book two. And it's strange to have the characters themselves commenting about how much of a waste of time that whole second book felt to read, to listen to as an audiobook. And I know this is weird that I'm now still reviewing the second book, but the second book, the what was it called, the Before They Are Hanged, there's two things in it which make, like, which actually progress the story forwards, and none of the main character, one of the main characters has got something very important to do with that, and another one of the main characters has got something tangentially, you know, involved in that, but in more of a reactionary capacity, and nothing he does actually makes any difference. But, and then you're just like, well, that's it. Like, nothing else in that second book matters. And I thought, well, maybe some of this is gonna matter. And of course, we find out a few of the answers. We find out what did matter and what didn't matter. But, you know, there's, just going through a bit more of our notes here. Oh, yeah. In book three, though, we do get a lot of story. Like I was saying, nothing in book one seemed to, like, you could see there was some important stuff happening, but I wasn't quite sure what. Book two, it seemed like even in the book itself, nothing important seemed to be happening. Book three, lots of important stuff seems, on the face of it, seems to be happening in the first book. Like, for example, Luthar comes back and, you know, he becomes the king. And suddenly all of the important stuff that Baez was telling, Baez is the wizard who is, who went, you know, kind of got people together at the beginning of the first book or in the middle of the first book. And he was the one who was like doing stuff and doing stuff with magic here and making people meet up there. And I'm thinking, well, I'm sure this is going to be important. And when Luthar becomes king, you're like, oh, it was important. He was setting this all up for Luthar to become king later on. Ah, you know, well, that makes a bit more sense there. And that thing makes a bit more sense there. That makes things. But then there's other characters like, you know, Logan Nine Fingers, who is our barbarian, who we met right at the very beginning. You know, he comes down from the north, spends some time in a city, hanging out, doing nothing all the way through the first book. The second book, he goes all the way to the west, and he, you know, literally left behind everything that I thought might happen with him, and, you know, in the central, you know, in the union, in the center of this thing. He goes all the way across, and then he does nothing there, and he doesn't have any impact. Nothing that they do there has any impact. And then he comes back to the center, and then goes back up to the north, and meets up with the people who he split up with in the first chapter of the first book. He meets back up with those people, and they say, oh, nothing up here has changed. And I was thinking, well, what has Logan done in the 6 months of story time since the first chapter of the first book? And I'm like, he's not achieved anything. He's not done anything. And for what he does through to the end of the third book, the end of the whole of the trilogy, like, nothing that he does in any of that time is dependent on anything that he seems to have learnt or done for the entirety of 2.5 novels. So he could have gone on vacation. He could have just left and gone on vacation for 6 months, and then he could have come back, met up with the old guys again, and said, oh, okay, let's do this. There is a slight thing where he goes, oh, now we've got to go south and help these guys out. But you're just like, well, like, why did we spend all that time with him? And why did we go on this character journey with him, like, for 2.5 books? Like, my 55% update on Goodreads.com is like, at this point, halfway through the last book in a trilogy, the main character from the opening book finally does something important. Finally, he did something important. And for the last, like, half of the third book, he's an important character. He's doing important stuff. He's leading his army and doing this kind of stuff. And it's like, yeah, okay, I understand why you're part of this story now. Now I understand why you're part of this story. But why is he even part of all the other story? He's just tagging along with people. And the other characters feel very much the same. You know, Glockter, Sandan Glockter, who is a great character, really good stuff. You know, he spends the second book, you know, first book messing around in one city, and then he goes around and does the stuff in another city, and then he comes back, you know. But it's like we're just retreading a lot of that story. You know, he's doing more stuff with his, you know, his torturing, and with the Mercer's Guild. It's not the Mercer's Guild, it's like another guild, and these other characters turn up, and they're, oh, these characters are going to be good, and then there's another siege in another city, and I think, oh, this is great, but it felt a bit kind of repetitive. But, like, he does become an important character. This, all of these different missions that he's been sent on all seem to come to nothing, and all the things that he, you know, all comes to it doesn't really come to anything that he's been doing for these past few books. He is an important character, and, the, you know, he is there when important stuff happens, and he investigates important stuff and you know, thinks about important stuff. But again, it just takes so long for him to actually do anything where you go, wow, that was actually something important. Pharaoh Mal'Jin, halfway through this book, she happens to look up in the right direction and she does something important, and that's the first important thing that she's actually accomplished or done for 2.5 novels. Halfway through the third novel in a trilogy, she does something important. And Colin West, which is one of my favourite characters, the, you know, the military leader up in the north, he carries on being important and then just disappears for the second half of this book, you know? And suddenly he just drops out of the equation when all these other people start finally doing important stuff. And that brings us to the main character of the entire series, which now you can see. Juliana was looking through some iTunes reviews for the SFBRP last night, and one of the trends that we found actually was in the UK, all of the most helpful reviews are the 5-star reviews, and all of the top, like, the majority of the reviews are 5-star reviews and 4-star reviews of the SFBRP, this is. But then the American ones are loads and loads. All the most helpful reviews are these people who listened to one episode and disagreed quite strongly with me in one episode and felt so compelled to come across and write a 1-star review, and everyone else has been like, oh, that's, you know, very helpful. And it's quite funny. I was thinking of doing a special episode where I reply to some of these criticisms, because some of them are direct and valid criticisms of one thing I said in one podcast that one person disagreed with and gave it a 1-star, which is fine. I have no problem about that. But one of the things that said in the iTunes, well, in this iTunes review of my review of the first book in the first lore series, which is this series by J.R.R. Tolkien, I say, oh, and Baez is like the Gandalf figure, and I just instead of saying Baez, I just say Gandalf. And I understand why now I understand why someone who's read this series could find that a bad enough offence to give my SFBRP a 1-star review. First of all, it's a joke. I don't think Baez is anything like Gandalf, but Secondly, it was a shortcut. It was like a shortcut to introduce the idea of a character who turns up, who's a wizard, who's very old, who's been around since, you know, thousands of years old, way older than any other character, knows what's going on while other people don't seem to know what's going on, and gets people to go on a quest when they don't know what's going on and he does know what's going on. So that was my kind of shortcut there, even though, even at the time, I wasn't seriously saying that this character is like Gandalf. For storytelling purposes, that is more of his function. But then, now I've actually read the third book, I understand that, of course, Baez is absolutely nothing like Gandalf. And because he always, like, sure, that's a bit like Gandalf. He did tell stories about what happened in the old time, and there are some things in common, but he's got a very different character. But now I realise, actually having read this third book in the series, that Gandalf, that Baez, he didn't only know what was happening all along, and it, again, that's just on the level of it, that's always really frustrating when you get a character who knows what's going on, and all of these different characters also... They don't know what's going on, but it's just like, just ask this guy over here. This guy knows what he's doing. And, you know, part the way through the second book, someone's going, so why are we going on this really long quest, which is going to take 6 months and the whole second book in this series? And you know, what are we actually going over then? Finally, he starts filling people in on some of those details. I'm like, thank you. But then there's so many other details, which is just like, why don't you just ask Baez, what about this? And why is he doing this? And Baez always knew what was happening all the way through, but all this time I had this kind of quantum uncertainty in my, this kind of waveform in my brain where lots of important stuff was happening, but because I didn't know why it was happening or what the outcome, what the sought outcome was, or anything like that, you know, this happens so often where people kind of lay out lots of evidence for a thesis, and they go, look at this evidence, and look at this evidence, and look at this evidence, and you're like, well, what's your thesis? What are you trying to prove with all this evidence? You're just laying on evidence over here, and disconnected evidence over there, and disconnected evidence over there, disconnected evidence over there, and then say, and now, here is my thesis, here is the big reveal, and you go, well, that makes sense of that over there, and that makes sense over that over there, and if it's a short enough thing, you can, like, do a setup, and do a setup, and do a setup, and then do the punchline, and that uncertainty collapses in a very nice, satisfying way. However, when all of those uncertainties, when all of those weird facts and important information that you kind of recognize as important, but, like, I read the first book in this series, like, you know, 2 years ago, and now I've read the, you know, two and a half years later, whatever it is, I finished the third book in the series. There must have been loads of really important stuff that now I've forgotten about. I just don't remember. You know, there's some stuff that I do remember, and I was still thinking, well, why is this going on? And, you know, at the end of the second book, I'm thinking, Luthor is going to become king. That explains this, this, and this, and this, and the thing that Baez said there. But a lot of the stuff was left uncertain, was left, like, just up in the air. So, again, that's a recommendation. If you do read this series, certainly just read them all the way through as, like, one after the other, as a single story, and it'll be probably quite satisfying as a puzzle in that way. But, you know, I found it just frustrating. And then, like, three quarters of the way through this book, actually, no, probably a lot more than that, maybe, like, 80, 90% of the way through this book, there's a chapter, and it's called Answers, and I'm like, maybe this is going to be the chapter where I get all the answers and everything, all of these weird uncertainties and all these, this standing waveform is going to collapse into a coherent story. Maybe all along there has been a story, and all these characters have been doing all of these things for a reason, and this is actually going to be an important move by this character, and this character, all these decisions that people have made are going to be really important. And in the chapter called Answers, spoil the chapter, really, because what happens is that Baez sits another character down and tells them all of the answers. And he's saying, you know this event that happens in book one? Well, that was me. And this and this and this in book one? Well, I was controlling that all the time, and here's why. And this happened when this magic-y thing happened. That's why I use magic here. And me as well, you know. And I was just pulling everybody's strings from the start, you know. And all these things in book two, that was me. And the guy who gave you this, that was me. And this person who did that, and the people pulling strings over here, that was me as well. And he's just like saying, in fact, for the entirety of this book series, from the very first page, from before the very first page, I have been 100% in control. And all those other things that you didn't know were important, or you just thought they were accidents, that was me as well. You know, all of that was me. And I was reading this and I was just thinking, well, like, you know, and then all the stuff in book three as well, that was all bias. And I'm just thinking, so, all of these things that these other people were doing literally didn't matter, and Byers was in control, and it didn't matter because Byers was in control all that time through. And then through to the end of book three, I was thinking, now everyone realized that Byers is in control, they're going to rise up and do something about it, and, you know, try and make their own way and push him out of control, because he's obviously the bad guy now. He's very much more of a Saruman rather than a Gandalf. You know, he's very much Saruman, and he's been bad all along from before the beginning of the story. But nobody does that. Byers stays in control. Nobody does anything about it. And the book ends with Byers still in control. And again, lots of really frustrating things about this. First, of course, wouldn't it have been like nicer to have found this out earlier on before we realize that everything has been done, everything that has happened all the way through, it's been Byers has been in control all the time. Wouldn't it have been interesting to know that earlier on so I could appreciate the twists and turns and how much he was in control? Second point, like, everybody else was so much of a pawn, and that's the reason why nobody ever did anything that felt important. And even at the end of it, once we got all the answers, the things that they did felt less important and less momentous and with less impact. Third, I guess, is that, like, it's really annoying that after all of that time, you think, well, Glockter, he's an intelligent guy, he'll be able to find all this stuff out, and he's an inquisitor. So if he's inquisitive enough, he should be able to look into this, find the person pulling all the strings, point to the guy who's pulling all the strings, confront him and say, this is my theory, this is what I found out, you know, in that kind of like, hey, let me sit you down and give me the answers, because I want to take you to task about all of this. Like, somebody has kind of bettered Byers intellectually, or seen through his, you know, through his veils, like seen the strings that he's been pulling behind and got to the base of this. And I thought, and you could kind of see that Glockter could have done that all the way through, but he didn't, because Byers didn't want him to. And then Byers just tells him all the secrets. It's just answers. It's not like questions, and we'll find out some answers later, or here is Byers's hypotheses, and here is Byers confirming or denying them. It's not that. It's just now Byers explains all of the First Law series and everything that went up. And, you know, and it gets to the point where Glockter's like, oh, and that's why you use magic there. And Byers is like, yes, and I did this and this and this. And he's like, oh, and that explains this. And Byers is like, yes, and that's why that happened and 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 that happened. And it's just like, well, look, the story that was happening in this book, I was really enjoying until I found out that one guy was controlling it all. And in the same time, like, it was just him explaining it. Fourthly, I like the idea of this kind of story. I like the idea of a Saruman, someone who we think is Gandalf, turns out to be Saruman, and then all along, and then you think, well, now we need a Gandalf to get together, to put a team together, to stop Saruman, but actually, no, there is no Gandalf in this story. Turns out Gandalf isn't interested in what's happening in the Middle Earth. He's gone off with the elves and stuff. And in the end, Saruman wins. And I'm thinking, yeah, that is actually a really interesting story. And I don't mind the bad guy winning in the end. I don't mind the good person who we think is the good guy at the beginning turning out to be the bad guy. But what is really annoying is that, yeah, again, it's difficult to say what's annoying, but, like, I do remember this episode of the Writing Excuses podcast where they say, okay, if you're going to play with the tropes and going to subvert the tropes of fantasy or science fiction, what's going to happen is the people who actually want to have these tropes subverted and are happy with that, they don't want to sit through, like, a whole novel's worth, or in this case, a whole series worth of kind of basic fantasy to get to the end and find out that it hasn't been that story all along, it's been this other story. And that's going to be very unsatisfying because they're not going to get to the end. And I almost didn't get to the end of the series, you know, except people said, no, it is worth carrying on. And I understand why it is worth carrying on, because it is a different story. It is a different story than a normal fantasy book. And it's a very interesting story. But I had to get through all of this other stuff, which I wasn't quite sure what the point was or what the direction it was going in. You know, if it's going to be a normal book. But then the other thing that I said on this Writing Excuses podcast is that when you get to the end, the people who are just wanting a straight fantasy story and don't want all of the tropes to be flipped on the head, they're unsatisfied because they've been enjoying the story up until that point. And it is a big problem. And I don't think Joe Abercrombie pulls it off. He could have got there. I reckon if this answers scene hadn't been there, and if the characters, like if a character had come to this like revelation by themselves, this entire series could have been a really interesting story. But to get all the way through that point and then get to that point and just have one character go, oh, and you know what? Here's all the answers that you've been thinking about this entire time. And I was just like, well, like, the character who was told that didn't seem to have earned it, because it's just random that he was told that, or, you know, he'd done a lot of work to get into that position. Anyway, four main points about all of this, which was very unsatisfying. The other thing which was very strange in this third book in this series, that one of the things that I actually really enjoyed so much about certainly the first two books is the characters. And I've said this before in the previous review, the characters are really interesting. They're going on interesting, going on an interesting character journey. Yeah, whatever. They've got good arcs. They've got interesting insights. They've got interesting voices, you know, literally and figuratively, you know, sort of like, literary voices and the voicing of them by the audiobook narrator, Stephen Pacey, is it? Something Pacey? I will look that up later when I get more to that point. For example, I really liked the Glockter, who is this inquisitor, this torturer. I liked his practicals because he's all disabled by himself. And then he's got these two practicals called Frost and Severard. And in the last podcast, I described them as his hands, because he's so disabled. They are just extensions of himself who carry out his will without question and without flaw. And it's really interesting now, in this book, Glockter actually said, these are my boys, my eyes, my hands. He actually says those words, and I was like, yes, it's really interesting how they were written, and very satisfying. They're continuing, their own, the way that their story progresses in this book, and I actually quite found that quite satisfying. And Glockter himself, well, I'll get into Glockter as well, but, my point is that, except for some minor characters, all of the main characters, there's like six or seven, or let me just say five or six main characters, and their characters seem to be going, like, the progress as human beings seem to be going in a really interesting direction for all of them up until the end of book two. And now here in book three, it's as though Joe Abercrombie has gone, oh, holy shit, we've got a lot of story to pack in here. Okay, all of that character stuff, let's kind of forget about, not the characters, because the characters are really still interesting, and they've been well developed, but they seem to kind of go back in reverse. I was looking on the Goodreads page here, and somebody reviewed it really well. It says Michael Minotilio, who rated it 3 stars, he's one of my friends on Goodreads, he says, the characters haven't changed much, or if they have, they've been reset like the next episode of an 80s TV show. And I was like, yes, that is actually true. The characters seem to have, like, regressed. They seem to have just gone back to the place that they were before. I mentioned it before, like, how, you know, Logan Ninefingers goes all the way down to the city in the south, and it goes across the west, and then, like, at the end of this, like at the beginning of this book, he's just like, well, wow, why did I even bother changing? Well, I guess I should try and change, and all that relationship that I had with this other character, which I thought was going to be interesting, that we're going to be partners from now on. Well, I guess that didn't work out. And he goes back up, and they're like, well, what have you been? Oh, just same old, same old. And then at the end of the book, like, it's quite comic that it's going for like a comedic end to the book, like an ironic end to the book, that Logan Ninefingers goes on this big journey and he goes down south and he becomes a chief and all this other kind of stuff that goes on. You know, he was a leader of men, and he ends the book literally in the same place as the very start of the very first scene in the trilogy. I think it's the very first scene where he's plunging into a river, and nobody else around him knows if he's going to live or die. And of course, he survives. And at the end of the last book, he's falling into a river, and I guess we're not meant to know if he's going to live or die, but everybody else around him is going to kind of, he's going to be presumed dead in the same way. I'm just thinking, wow, this character has, he hasn't gone on a character arc, he's gone on a character loop, looped back round at the beginning of book three, and then throughout book three goes on another loop and ends at exactly the same place again. And the Dogman, one of his kind of lieutenants as well, he had an interesting journey. And then as soon as Logan Ninefingers turns up and all this other stuff, he just goes, well, I'm just back to kind of lost all importance that he gained in the second book and all the stuff that he did there. He's just gone back to being a soldier again. Giselle Dan Luther, he learns important lessons in life. And, of course, he does progress. He goes from like a spoilt brat nobleman's son through a really interesting transition. You think he's learning something in book two, and then he becomes king, and then he goes back to a spoiled brat of a king, and then he kind of learns something, and then at the end he just kind of gets put in himself, and you kind of feel sympathy for him by the end, but kind of more like pity for the idiot. He's still not learning anything. You just go, well, come on. And Colin West, who was one of my favorite characters, one of the Union soldiers in the North, he was the only one of the only people who did anything important in the second book. And then you know, he keeps going in that direction. It, really interesting start of the book for him. And then halfway through the book, he just disappears from the book and just isn't involved anymore. And Farrah Maljin, she's just kind of like still annoyed. She was going in different directions and just reset. And like all of these characters, which I understand it's like, well, they all realize that trying to be better people isn't worth it, and they've just got to get by in the world. And this person decided to be a better person here, or this person wanted to do this, and yeah, and Glockter as well. You know, Glockter is going, yeah, he does this thing, and in this third book he makes a decision, which is actually quite obvious that he's going to do, and it's quite a cute little writing thing that they did, that Joe Abercrombie did, when, you know, when he's dealing with Glockter the character. But by the end of the book, you're just like, well, why is Glockter, who is meant to be the hero, it's like he's worse in this book. He's like, okay, you, woman, we're going to rape you, or we're going to rape your friend if you don't do what I want. And you're like, okay, I understand this guy is a hero. He's like an anti-hero, and he's a bad guy, but he's a good guy. We're meant to kind of sympathize with him in some ways, and he's an interesting character. He's a very interesting character. But when it gets to the point where it's like, okay, rape as weapon, I'm just like, it's just really difficult for me now to appreciate this guy as anyone heroic. And I guess it all comes back to the main kind of theme of this series, or the main idea of this series, which is that everyone grimaces all the time. I mentioned in the previous review, grimace is actually pronounced grimace and grimace. And in the previous review, I did this thing where I kept on hitting this button, which said
grimace.
And then another one said grimace. Unfortunately, Google, when I type in define grimace or define grimace, it doesn't have a little button which I can press and do the same joke as I did before. Anyway, I decided to count up how many times the word grimace or grimace is used, and it always sticks out to me because Stephen Pacey, who is the audiobook narrator, he pronounces it grimace, and I pronounce it grimace, and I've asked around and still nobody ever knows the pronunciation grimace except him. I even asked other audiobook narrators if it's grimace or grimace, and Simon Vance said grimace. Anyway, so I decided to count it up, and every time I got to the word grimace in the audiobook, I did a little screenshot and I counted up, and it's 30 times that the word grimace is mentioned in this book. And at the same time I was reading this book, I've been reading another two books, listening to the audiobook of The Prefect by Alistair Reynolds, which has a grand total of two grimaces in the entire book. And I'm just currently reading Consider Phlebas, and I did a quick search through the ebook. Grimace mentioned 7 times, and Consider Phlebas is, oh, Consider Phlebas? Phlebas? I'm not quite sure how I pronounce it. That is quite a grim book. You know, it's a grim book, but still only 7 grimaces or grimaces in that book. In this book, in The Last Argument of Kings, 30 grimaces. Maybe I missed some as well, but those are the ones that I heard and made a note of. And after going through the whole grimace thing, which people quite enjoyed the grimace conversation that I had with myself and Google and dictionary.com on the last podcast, other people said, oh yes, grimace is grimace and grimace and do this. But it made me remember the idea of fantasy being something called grimdark, and which seem to go around some blogs and some other times, you know, it's, you know, within the blogosphere of science fiction and fantasy, maybe mostly fantasy, there's lots of what is grimdark, and so I typed in grimdark fantasy into into Google, and the third hit is The Value of Grit, written by, it's a blog post written by Joe Abercrombie, and I haven't read the whole article, but I guess it's him defending how gritty his books are. Let me put it that way. Like people are saying, oh, your books are too grim. They're too grimdark. And the definition comes from Urban Dictionary here. It says grimdark, an adjective taken from the root words of grim and darkness, both of which are featured in the tagline for Warhammer 40,000. In the grim darkness of the far future, there is only war. It is usually used to describe a setting that would equal poor living conditions and life expectancies for those actually living in it. So yeah, grimdark is the process of turning something into something grimmer and darker, and that's what I was reminded of that phrase by the word grimace just coming up over and over and over again. It's not only one character who grimaces; it's just like all these characters grimace all the time. So they grimace all the time, and the first grimdark fantasy is another blog post again about Joe Abercrombie, and there's all these, and George R. R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire, how it's all, and we were talking about this last night, weren't we, Juliana? I was saying, yes, the Song of Ice and Fire, we watched the first Game of Thrones episode together, and you were like, it's just boobs and death, wasn't it? I can't even remember what it was. And it's just like
intrigue.
Yeah, boob intrigue and death, and the intrigue leads to more boobs and death. That is pretty much that. And the idea being, and I understand this, and I actually, this is the thing that I most appreciate, and it's a weird thing for me to say, that this is the thing that I actually most enjoyed about the first Lore series. I really enjoyed the idea that it was grim, that it was dark, that none of the main characters were good guys. All of the main characters were pretty bad. Logan Ninefingers is a demon-possessed child murderer in this book, and I'm like, this guy is awesome. And this other person is infested with, oh, she's like demon, not demon infested, oh no he's, yeah, whatever, and then there's another one, Mal'Jin, is like this woman who can hear the spirits, and she's like infested with demons by the end of it, and I was like, oh man, I want to be just like her, I want to know what her story is. And Glockter is a torturer who's been tortured himself in the past, and his teeth, he doesn't have any teeth left, and he doesn't have any toes left, and his nipples have been chopped off, and he's had spikes drawn through him, and his hands don't work properly. I'm just like, this guy's really, really interesting. And again, the Baez, who you think is going to be the good wizard all the way through, turns out he's the bad wizard. And Colin West, who is a hero, he does something which is like, for kind of a heroic but very selfish reason, does the very important thing that he does in the second book, which is, again, a very bad thing. And all the way through to the end, I'm just like, yes, these characters have depth. Everybody is a very, very dark shade of grey. I really like fantasy, which is very, very many shades of dark grey, and that is what makes all these characters really interesting. There aren't, like, even Ardy, who is this, you know, she comes back into the book, you know, Luther goes away, and he's like, oh, I just want to be back home with Ardy. Ardy's really nice. She's a perfect woman for me. She's a commoner, but I'm not going to become a nobleman. I'm not going to become an officer. I'm just going to go home, and I'm just going to spend time with Ardy. And in this book, he gets home. Ardy is a weird kind of sex-obsessed alcoholic, and you're just like, wow, that is actually a really interesting dynamic, that the hero returns home, and his wife, or his, you know, his perfect woman who he wants to come home and make into his wife, has just turned to drink because she's been waiting for so long, and he didn't write to her, and the brother's up here, and the lover's across there, and it's just like, wow, again, even the all these other characters, you know, it's just, I really, really enjoyed the characters moving around in this grim, dark world, and these characters grimacing all the time has got some, it really appeals to me. The thing, again, which brings it down, which doesn't appeal to me, is the fact that, like, if it was that grim stuff and it had a strong story, or if the story that was going through, I realized it was going to be Well, let me put it this way. I enjoyed the fact that it turned out that none of the good guys really turned good in the end. And I mean, I thought it was a bit disappointing that the characters seem to be just like, they, like I say, they seem to be reset or kind of like reversed or left behind. It would have been nice to see some characters progress in some way. But I don't mind the fact that none of the people suddenly become good guys and heroes and have a big heroic ending. I like the idea that Saruman wins in the end and Gandalf turns out, yeah, he was actually Saruman. All of that stuff, really great. But like, I don't know. It just felt like the entire trilogy was a trick played on me as a reader, and the answer to the riddle was there all along, but was kept from me in a super frustrating way. And then the frustration was allayed in a very, very frustrating way. If that frustration at the story had been resolved in a more interesting way or a non-frustrating way, I would say definitely read this series. It's a really good series. However, the two sides of it, which are the nihilistic grimness, gritty reality, really grim, dark kind of style, and the story, which you think is going to be hopeful, which turns out not to be hopeful, is really good. All of the characters are really good. I just think the plotting and what the characters are actually doing. And I know this is part of the point. I know the point is actually it turns out that they were all pawns. None of the things that they did was important. It's entirely nihilistic in that way. And nothing that they do, even by the end of the trilogy, has any impact. None of them were important. They're all small people. And this guy over here was the important one all along. And I'm just like, yeah, great message. Interesting message. Nice trick. But I didn't like that trick being played on me. That I think there's better ways to do it, and that's why in the end I'm gonna give this series like I gave the first book 2 stars, the second book 3 stars. I think in total I'm gonna kind of maybe average them out, but then bump it up because I did actually quite like the characters and what the characters are doing and all of that kind of stuff. So I'm gonna give the series 3 stars overall, which means it's a good book. Like if it's 2.5 stars, it's completely average. I think it's slightly better than average just because it really is doing something new. It's just the frustration and lack of coherent plotting. Again, I don't want a linear plot. I don't mind characters wandering around, not quite sure what's going on. But it would be nice if it didn't feel like a trick was being played on me. I don't appreciate that. Even if I think, oh no, I do appreciate it if there's a big trick being played on me. And I've talked about this with spoilers before. If there's a really, if you say, oh, don't spoil it for me, I like to be made to feel stupid. However, in this book, I didn't like to be made to feel stupid because the revelation didn't make me think Joe Abercrombie was more intelligent than me. So all he did was make me feel stupid and then revealed another level of stupidity in a way that I couldn't have felt intelligent. I don't feel like there was any way for me to, like, in that first book, understand what was going on. I was like, yeah, okay. And at the end of the second book, I was like, yeah, okay. And then halfway through the third book, I was like, really, is that it? And then at the end of it, I was just like, right. Like, you've not done anything which was clever enough to make me feel good about feeling stupid. I don't appreciate, anybody's twist when it's not a clever twist. I don't appreciate being made to feel stupid just to be replaced with the revelation is just something more stupid. And something more stupid which could have been communicated because the guy was right there on the time. Everybody knew one person knew the answer all the way through. Anyway. That's it. So I'm going to give it 3 stars. I think I've wrapped up what I liked about the First Law series and hopefully what I enjoyed and what I didn't enjoy about this book. I didn't really talk very much about this third book. There's battles, there's sieges, there's people killing each other. It doesn't really matter what's in the third book. And of course, I don't really want to spoil it because I think it is, like, if you've read through those first 2 books or you're thinking, shall I read this series? I haven't really given anything away. That all the good stuff is still there. The characters and actually what story there is. Just be prepared that literally you're going to get halfway through the last book in the series and you're going to find out all of the interesting or important stuff that's happened so far. And you're going to find out that nothing that any of the characters have done has been important up until that point. However, it's well written, characters are interesting, and the story in the third book is good if frustrating because you know that you've had to have read the first 2 books just to enjoy the story in the third one. So that's it for me. 3 stars for this book and 3 stars for the series overall, I think. but not in any way a classic, except a classic of Grimdark, which I quite like. Anyway, Stephen Pacey did the Audible book, so if you actually want to support the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast, you can go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP and start a free 1 month trial. And after that, if you sign up, if you just do that, it helps support the SFBRP, audibletrial.com/SFBRP to do an Audible trial. I do recommend it. I'm a platinum member there. And I listen to loads of audiobooks. And the great thing is that I really do suggest don't start off with an audiobook of a book you've never read before. About half of the audiobooks that I listen to are books that I've read before in paper books or in ebooks or otherwise. I'm listening to The Prefect at the moment by Alison Reynolds. Awesome book. I would suggest getting that. It's a really good thing. If you've read that book before, or even if not, it's really great. Second time through, this time it's an audiobook. Really impressive book. Me and Juliana are listening to that together, so we'll probably do a review of that together once we finish it. We've been listening to it as a car of journeys. Anyway, I do recommend audibletrial.com/SFB to start your free Audible trial. Loads of fantasy, loads of science fiction, like 150,000 other books as well, apart from The Last Argument of Kings and Alistair Reynolds' The Prefect, which is my recommendation this time out. You can follow. The best thing to do is actually become one of my bestest friends, my top friends on Goodreads.com, and that means I can also look at what you think of the books that I read. For example, here, 47 friends have reviewed this book for a 4.09 average, and overall on Goodreads.com 4.22. I had a look at some of these. Sort of like Terp Christian says, 3 stars. Not what I expected, but now, about a week after I finished it, I can't remember much about the book, so I'm guessing it didn't hit me as much as I thought it did. But there's lots of people who've given it 5 stars. Good end to a great series. All fantasy fans should read this trilogy. That's Will says that. And lots of other people say other stuff. And I've noticed this thing about these ratings, like on Amazon and, on Goodreads. Which I guess is owned by Amazon now. Anyway, these last books in the series are like books that are in longer series. They often get a higher rating, even if they're not so good. I think this is good. I don't think it's worth 4.22 or 4.07 or 0.9 stars or whatever it is here. But of course, the fans of the series will keep reading through and enjoy it, and people who didn't like it will never read it. So these books very rarely get 1 stars. Lots of 3 stars and 2, like 3 stars and 4 stars and 5 stars, but not so many 1 stars, because if you're going to give it, if you might have given it 1 star, well, you probably wouldn't read it anyway. Become a friend on Goodreads so I can follow along with what you're reading, and you can follow along with my updates too. You can read my own science fiction and books, which you can find at lukebowditch.com. I've got a music album coming out soon, so I might talk about that in following podcasts once it's completed. Be able to buy that on iTunes. What else do I say? Oh, yeah, you can review me on iTunes. I'll talk about that with Juliana, some other podcast, I'm sure. Otherwise, yeah, follow me on Twitter and email me, Luke. I'm Luke Burridge on Twitter, and email me, luke@juggler.net, with anything, any questions at all. I do reply to every email that I get, or 99% of the emails that I get. Sometimes they fall through the cracks. So if you sent me an email and I haven't replied, it might have been caught in a spam filter, or I accidentally archived it and didn't reply to it, or something like that. So send an email again if you're waiting for a reply. And otherwise, sign up, go into goodreads.com and check out the SFBRP listener group. We're always chatting there about various books that I'm reading and other situations as well. If you've got a book recommendation for me, one of the best things that you can do is post about it on the SFBRP listeners group on goodreads.com, and then other people will chime in and say, yes, Luke, you should read this, or no, Luke, you probably won't like this. And that's the best way to convince me to get me to read a book. I'm going to check out some Neil Asher for the first time because somebody did that. And that's it from me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.